is Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy, the arts of attracting, acquiring, and retaining talent. Here's Kathleen.
This week we're highlighting Arrowette, an Arizona-based nonprofit whose mission is to provide education assistance, workforce development, and job opportunities to incarcerated and formerly incarcerated women who are sincere about working hard to change their livelihood. And I'm joined by Arrowette's CEO, Allison Rapping, as well as Danielle Hughes, who works in the Second Chance Employer Outreach. Ladies, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. We're delighted to be here.
Well, I've really been looking forward to our conversation because one of the recurring themes on this podcast has been around narrow talent pools and tapping into new talent pools, one of which being the formerly incarcerated. So, Allison, maybe you can kick us off by telling us about Arrowette and the history behind the organization.
Absolutely. So Arrowette was created in 2011 as an organization to support women and their families as they are involved in and exiting out of the justice system. So we work with women primarily at Perryville Women's Prison, but we also work with any woman who's been involved in the justice system. We run a program inside of the prison. We run reentry support for women as they exit out of prison. And then we run a comprehensive opportunity center that focuses on financial wellness, all of the income supports and wraparound services that people need, and finding gainful, meaningful employment. That's in a nutshell what we do, and we really have supported over 1,500 women since our inception.
Wow, that's great. So what drew you to this mission?
That's a great question. And I have an interesting history because I actually came to Arizona in 1994 to start a volunteer service organization called Hands on Greater Phoenix. About the time that I had been doing that for over 10 years, my brother was starting an organization called Gideon's Promise. And Gideon's Promise was a national organization about reforming indigent defense in America. And I went and spent about 3 years in Atlanta, Georgia with my family, helping them build Gideon's Promise. And once I saw what I saw in prisons all over the South, I came back to Arizona and I couldn't unsee what I saw. So I got very involved in working in criminal justice, specifically working with women in the justice system.
Wow. What was it that, I mean, was there one or two things that just, you know, that you just really were taken away with?
There was a woman in a prison in Mississippi thinking that her life was completely over. And she had this conversation with a young lawyer, a young woman lawyer, who reassured her that things were going to be okay. And that experience changed me. And I realized that I had the opportunity to be that person for women, that I could go into the prisons and I could help women see that this despair is not necessary. And there are things that could happen that are going to turn your life around. And I have never looked back since. It has been such an incredible experience working with Arrowette and all of these incredible women like Danielle.
Well, that's what we need, people like you to drive this, because this is an important thing that you're doing over there, and especially for these women, but even for our employers today. So, Danielle, you were impacted by the criminal justice system. Would you mind sharing your story?
Yeah, so my story can be a long one, but purposes of this, I will try and shorten it a little bit. My story kind of started when I was younger with trauma. I grew up on a sailboat, and while we were in Argentina, I was attacked, and had a lot of things happen to me. And from that, my path kind of changed. I, you know, started trying to escape my feelings and things that had happened, memories, and I found myself going down a really bad path of abusing substances and really trying, I guess I found out later, escaping myself. And later, about in my 20s, I was attacked again, and this time had a beautiful daughter who is now 16. And, you know, around that time, you know, I started, I believe, really coming into myself and getting better. But around that time, my dad also passed away from a motorcycle accident. And everything went downhill from there. And that was my first introduction to incarceration. I was given 3.5 years. I was allowed to take my daughter. It was in California, a little different than Arizona. And we ended up doing exactly 1 year. And I have to say that I think in that time and place, I just wasn't there yet. I wasn't ready to really face things that had happened in my past. So unfortunately, when I was released in 2010, I moved from California to Arizona, where my mom had to pick up and start over. And I found myself in a relationship that was extremely abusive, physically, verbally. And I think I was receptive to that relationship and fell into it because I really hadn't come to terms with or worked on myself. I was in that relationship for about 3.5 years. And because of my past charges, this time it was simply, three gold chains that I pawned that were not mine, but I found myself looking at a pretty serious sentence. The judge did end up giving me the lowest that he could, 5.5 years. And, when I went in, this was the first time I had to be separated from my daughter, who I was very attached to. We were together constantly. And the first year I was very sick when I went in. I had some issues with my spine and fibromyalgia due to what happened when I was younger. And so when I went in, I ended up dying. I wasn't taken care of medically and brought back, given emergency surgery. And from that point on, I decided that I was never going to allow my health to be in the hands of anybody else. I was never going to see the pain that I saw in my daughter's eyes every time she had to come and see me and leave. And so I started working out, started doing yoga, just really transforming myself into a vision of who I never believed I could be, and actually started becoming a survivor rather than somebody who is just stuck in their trauma. I was working for a company that was with a huge corporation outside of the prison that if you're lucky, you're able to get a position inside. And alongside that, I was approached by the deputy warden. She had heard some things and she wanted to know if I would teach. They didn't really have anything for treatment for addiction for the ladies in the prison. And there was a class called The Way Out that she wanted to introduce to my yard of 1,250 women. And it was a 3-month course and she wanted me to take it over and try it out. And I remember the feeling the first day after I finished teaching. It was the most incredible, natural high, I guess you could say, that I've ever felt in my life. And it lasted for hours. And for the first time ever, I knew what I was meant to do, what my passion was. And I continued to volunteer in that position for the next 3 years. The waiting list got so long, I ended up having to do 3 classes Saturday and 3 classes Sunday. Just to accommodate them. I also added to the curriculum. I felt that codependency needed to be a longer course, so it went to 4 months. And, around this time, I also was a part of a TEDx event where I was on the committee. And around that, shortly after that, I was introduced to Arrowet. As Allison said, Arrowet does before you're released intervention, and I was one of her first court classes when they started doing it at the prison. And I just knew, I remember looking at Allison one day and told her that I will one day be working or have something to do with Arrowet when I get out. And as soon as I was released, Allison was a huge part of my transition and even more so than I could ever expected. I mean, they're involved in making sure your family reunification is on point, and they are making sure that you have employment and that you have all the resources that you need when you get out. Very shortly after being released, I started being a part of their storytelling event. They had created this vertical within Arrowet where the women who had been incarcerated get to tell their story in front of business owners, people within corporations, to really open up their eyes and get them to see a real version, not just, hearing that this person has a record and, instantly going to where most people go with that. They have a picture of what this person must be like if they've been incarcerated or addicted. And this allowed for people to see us in a new light, to hear that we actually have more in common with them than they ever thought. And around that time, I started also doing some outreach for Arrowet, reaching out, building partnerships and relationships to hopefully allow for job openings for women who are getting out and becoming part of Arrowet as well. So, you know, I've just been really involved in that, speaking on the House floor, Senate floor, to introduce bills with some other organizations as well. So when I look back at my life then and what my mind process was then, there's no way that I would have ever been deserving enough in a position where I could have ever been where I am today. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just so blessed because people like, you know, Arrowet and Allison and even you guys doing this podcast, you know, it's amazing and you're changing lives. So I hope I didn't go on and on, but...
No, that I really appreciate you sharing your story, because I think it is really important that people understand we have media and TV and show, you know, and so we have this perception of formerly incarcerated, and we don't even use that nice word. We call them ex-cons, right? And so, you know, you talk about this storytelling event, and you know, so in 2019, I attended the annual Conscious Capitalism Conference that was here in Phoenix. And I heard these stories from the formerly incarcerated women. I don't know if you were one of them, Danielle, but for the uninitiated in our audience today, and I have to be really honest, I was part of that club in 2019. I'd really like to talk about the challenges that are facing these formerly incarcerated women, Allison. What's it like for somebody with a criminal record to apply for a job?
First of all, if you are someone who's been convicted of a crime and you've served time, once you exit, you should have every opportunity to enter the workforce as everyone else. But that's not the case. There are 145,000 collateral consequences that keep people out of the labor market. And that could be everything from getting a driver's license to licensing to HR policies to legal policies, either policies that are government policies or business policies. But we have so many ways that we keep really, really talented people out of the workforce. And I think we have to really look at this and look at how do we go about taking 78 million people who have criminal convictions and getting them employed. So one thing is we're asking businesses to look at their policies and think about how they might be able to think differently about these hires. The second thing is that when you hire someone who has a criminal conviction, often they are going to be some of your very, very best employees. I can attest to this. People coming out of prison, because they've gone to prison for the worst thing they've done in the worst moment of their life. We all can remember that moment in our lives where the worst thing happened and we've done something that we regret. But for some people, those regrets have very, very significant consequences. And once they pay their dues to society, we want to give them every opportunity to get back on their feet. So first of all, people serve a lot of time in prison. They need time to build new skills. They need time to put a resume together, to write a LinkedIn profile. We work very closely to help employers think about how to onboard people successfully. We are hosting an event on October 21st at the Arizona Biltmore Hotel, and we're bringing in national leaders to speak to this issue, people from national banks, people from national companies, to talk about not only why it's important to fair chance hire, but also tools and skills for how you can do that successfully.
So you talk about that companies need to look at their policies and think differently. What are three things that they could start with?
First, when you go online, the algorithm may automatically kick people out just because they check the box on the computer that says, I've been convicted of a felony. So we immediately knock a ton of qualified people out without even having a real person look at their application. So one thing I would ask is that companies actually look at these applications. The second is if somebody interviews and you love them, and at the end and they say, is there something else you want to add? We work really closely with the women on how to answer that question. We ask that if somebody says, I have a criminal record, you really let them tell their story and you go back and you think about what this person has done, how they have repented for the mistakes that they've made, and give them a chance. And then the third thing is to look at your own internal policies, policies that you've created yourself as a business, and see, are all of these really necessary? Is it really necessary to say if somebody's ever had a criminal conviction, they can't be employed here? Or if someone has ever maybe stolen something, they can't work here, but you realize that why they stole something was because they were in the height of active addiction and they're no longer that person. So I think three things are, look at the algorithm on your online hiring. The second is to really look at your own policies and procedures. And third, when somebody tells you about a criminal conviction, really take time to learn about what happened, because I think you can see that certain people are just going to wow you with how they've turned their lives around.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when I was at that conference and I was able to listen to the stories of these women, that was probably the huge takeaway for me. A mistake was made. They served their time. They paid their dues. Now they're ready to move on. And they have done everything in their power right to move on and get ahead.
Exactly. And there is a huge business emphasis on looking at this issue. So over the course of the last 4 years, we're seeing some amazing things happen in the business community. For example, there is the Second Chance Business Coalition, which is made up of over 20 of America's Fortune 100 companies, including Walmart, JP Morgan Chase, CVS Health. They are all looking at this and they are all steering the ship, encouraging other businesses to get involved. So I encourage your listeners to look at some of these websites, such as the Fair Chance Hiring Coalition, to see, or Dave's Killer Bread has just started an incredible program where they are training businesses through a website they've developed to help businesses learn how to onboard for Fair Chance. So there's some incredible initiatives in our business community being done to help support Fair Chance hiring and getting people back to work.
So, you know, one of the other things that I read, and I don't know how accurate this is anymore, but some of the research has shown that 85% of people, so those that are working in these organizations, report that they are willing to work with someone who's had a conviction. And I'm kind of curious if that number has improved over time, and that whole willingness piece really affects folks with a criminal record when they're looking for work. I mean, are there internal folks that, I mean, so you get your policies all straightened out, but then there are internal folks that have this, they discriminate or unconscious bias, whatever we want to call it today, that kind of stall the process.
That absolutely can happen. And I think it's incumbent on leadership in businesses to start to promote why Fair Chance Hiring is so important. One of the things that we run at Arrowet is a storytellers program. And the whole purpose of the storytellers program, which Danielle is a part of, is to really meet with businesses and have our storytellers tell their stories of success. Because I think sometimes if somebody's skeptical, if they hear success stories, that is going to help alleviate that skepticism. We have talked to over 30 companies in the last 3 years, including JP Morgan Chase. We've talked to a number of businesses about the importance of Fair Chance Hiring. And I'm really proud to say that we've probably encouraged at least 20 businesses in the Phoenix area to consider Fair Chance employment.
So let's talk about Fair Chance Hiring a little bit in more detail. So companies need to broaden their pool of candidates. And I also read that Justice Impacted People is one of the nation's largest untapped talent pool. I mean, that's crazy. Looking at Fair Chance Hiring, how can hiring leaders really discover this untapped talent? I mean, there's obviously some leaders through this, so maybe we can get into some more specifics around where can people go, how can they get involved and really tap into this pool of talent?
So I'm going to make a couple recommendations. First, Koch Industries, in partnership with SHRM, put together a toolkit about 4 years ago, a Fair Chance Hiring toolkit that you can get on the SHRM website for free. So I encourage everybody to download that toolkit. That is a really good way to start to think about how you can do this. The second is I would invite people that you know who are hiring Fair Chance to talk about their experience with leaders in your organization, particularly those companies that are part of the Fair Chance Hiring Coalition. They are very willing to go and speak to other companies about the success that they've had. Also, going to events such as our Fair Chance Employment Symposium is a great way to meet a lot of people that are actively and successfully doing Fair Chance. Also, there are a number of organizations that are offering online training, such as Dave's Killer Bread. Dave's Killer Bread offers a whole host of webinars and tools and resources that you can use. So there's a number of excellent places to go just to get started. You can also come to the Arrowet website. We may not be able to help you specifically, but we can certainly let you download all of our tools. And if they're of value to you, we're happy to let you use them.
Well, that's great. I did want to talk about the Fair Chance Employer Symposium that's going to be on October 21st at the Arizona Biltmore in Phoenix. Is this kind of like Fair Chance Hiring 101 for those uninitiated people?
What a great question. It's actually for everyone. It is absolutely Fair Chance 101. If you're interested in Fair Chance and want to learn more, come to this. We are inviting major business organizations to come and speak. So it's not just businesses, but the organizations that represent these businesses are going to be our keynote speakers. We're bringing in Jeff Kornizak from Fifth Third Bank, who is one of the nation's leading experts on Fair Chance Hiring. He's the author of a book, Untapped Talent. I encourage everybody to read the book. It literally is a blueprint for how to do this. He's going to be our keynote speaker. Then we're going to have a panel of business leaders talking about the business case. Then our next panel is going to be Arrowet storytellers and their employers talking about how success actually works. And we're going to allow questions and answers so people can ask really specific questions of the panel of how to make this work successfully. And then we're going to close with Ken Oliver, who's the head of the Checker Foundation, which Checker Company is the background check company. They have developed a comprehensive foundation. He leads that foundation, and he's going to be talking about action steps, what we need to do to move forward and create more opportunities for Fair Chance Hiring, specifically for the state of Arizona.
Well, it sounds like a fantastic. What is the best way for people to learn more about it?
ArrowetEmpowers.org. Again, ArrowetEmpowers.org. There's also going to be a series of blog posts and how-to articles that you're welcome to reference that you can read in advance. And so you can come to the conference well-prepared with your questions. And we're going to open it up so that you can meet these experts yourself and learn directly from them.
Great. Well, for those of our listeners that are not located here in the Valley of the Sun, will there be an opportunity to attend this virtually?
There won't be an opportunity to attend it virtually, but we are putting together some written materials and worksheets, and all of those are going to be available on our website. We also are happy to talk to any employer in any state who just wants some advice or ideas as to how to do this. They are welcome to call us. We know a lot of the organizations nationally that do this work. And if it's not in our state, but another state, we can probably help you locate an organization that can support you in the state that you're in.
Great. And the tail end of October at the Arizona Biltmore is a lovely time to come visit our state, right?
Absolutely.
Well, on that note, let's take a break. But coming up in the second part of my conversation with Arrowet's Allison Rapping and Danielle Hughes, Allison shares what Arrowet is thinking when it comes to criminal justice reform.
How can we come up with better solutions that are more cost-effective, that are more humane, that will allow for better results?
This has been Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy. To connect with Kathleen or to learn more about recruitment research, go to duffygroup.com.